97.2 FM in the Mix.
Welcome to In The Mix here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. I'm your host, Paul Mex, and this week I'm joined by Trevor Random.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. And a special surprise guest, Mr. Wayne Imms. You may remember him from The Geekend.
If you've got a really good memory, it's surely such a huge honour for you to have me here.
This is the show that Reverb didn't want us to broadcast, because this week we are looking at Stock, Aitken and Waterman. Us three boys, we love them.
Speak for yourself. Although they did have some good tunes. That can't be denied by anyone, really.
No. Well, let's kick off the show with one of their tunes, and this is the amazing Roadblock. You are listening to In The Mix here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. Don't worry, you haven't gone mad. That was Stock, Aitken and Waterman, probably the only time you will hear it on Radio Reverb. And today, all of our records are by Stock, Aitken and Waterman, because Trevor Random, who's with me now, and Wayne Imms from The Geekend, you may remember that show, they have both joined me today because we do like Stock, Aitken and Waterman, even if nobody else on Radio Reverb does.
Guilty pleasure for me, if you're going to...
That's the word, isn't it? Guilty pleasure. Coming to the mic.
Yeah, it's a guilty pleasure for me, but we were duped by that first single, weren't we? Roadblock, because when that came out in the charts was Mars with Pump Up the Jam. Raving.
No, sorry, can I correct you? Pump Up the Jam was Technotronic, and Mars was
Pump Up the Volume.
Pump up the volume. Yes,
well, that's why you're here, Wayne.
There was a reason why Stock, Aitken and Waterman bought that record out on a white label.
Yeah,
because by that point everybody hated Stock, Aitken and Waterman, as many people still do. But I personally think they made some really, really fine records, and I'm a record producer, so I'm allowed to say this. They made some really, really great records. I have to say, they did make a lot of rubbish as well,
yeah,
but they made some really, really great records, and that was one of them. But nobody really liked them at that point, so what they did was they pressed up a white label and put it out to all the DJs and said it had been imported from America so that nobody would know it
was Stock. I believed all of that.
Really?
I had the white label.
Really?
I fell for that totally.
That's probably a massive collector's item now.
Well, when you think of Stock, Aitken and Waterman, you generally think of acts like Kylie Minogue, maybe Bananarama,
yeah,
and obviously Jason Donovan, acts like that. Obviously, yeah, they produce so much more, but some might be surprised that they produced Cliff Richard,
yeah,
I Still Don't Have the Heart, Donna Summer,
yeah, Debbie Harry, Zig Zig Sputnik.
Probably less said about that one, the better, isn't it?
What, Success. Love Missile?
No, Success.
That was probably one of their minor hit follow-ups.
Towards the end, of course, Mel and Kim.
Well, Respectable, but I think their first single was Showing Out, which I preferred, actually.
Yeah, I like Showing Out.
Mix, you say that no one likes them, but obviously they sold so many records. So
I get loads of records.
The record by in public, very much like the product, as it were. But I think because they had so many records released over quite a short period, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
They dominated.
The mid to late 80s.
They dominated,
yes,
the charts, didn't they?
Absolutely, especially 1989.
Definitely.
Most music critics wouldn't like them, but no, because they had so much material, most people would like at least one or two of the tunes.
Yeah.
Because there was so much.
Pete Waterman, he was massively in the media a lot, wasn't he? Do you think he got a little bit too arrogant, and do you think that turned people off to them?
I think possibly, because he was more of the public face of the trio, really.
Well, they did the Hitman and Her that was on ITV late at night.
That's right, with Michaela Strachan. And I saw a clip of that on some TV show not long ago, and it was just as bad as I thought it. I remembered
it. Dreadful.
And Trevor, but you used to watch it religiously.
Well, not religiously. It was on when we used to get back early in the morning.
It was on a ridiculous time, something like 4 o'clock in the morning.
3 or 4 in the morning. I've got a vague memory of it. And Jason Orange from Take That was one of his dancers.
Right. Apparently they hated each other, didn't they? Michaela Strachan and Pete Waterman.
Yeah, that came across if you watch it. But Pete was the ego. He was the one that pushed himself forward. But that's not to diss their body of work, and it is a huge body of work, as we're going to find out. One of my favourites was Princess, Say I'm Your Number One.
We'll definitely be playing that on today's show. It was almost like a soul classic.
Yeah. It was, actually, because, you know, as you both know, the 80s saw a real kind of resurgence in British soul music, but a lot of that was a mix of pop and soul, like what springs to mind. You've got Mummy Used to Say by Junior. You've got Shalimar. A lot of it was quite cheesy, like, for example, Phil Fearon, what happened to him with Galaxy, What Do I Do, and Dancing Tight, and all that kind of thing. But there was so much more of it.
There was a lot of underground soul happening at that time as well, which wasn't for the mainstream either, was there? They kind of bridged a gap between...
Yeah, so like Princess was, a real kind of quality soul singer. And then you had like Loose Ends. Obviously, lots of these weren't PWL productions.
No.
Princess is probably an example of how underestimated they can be.
Why don't we play Princess now? Let's have a listen to that.
Here is what we all consider, all three of us, we're in joint agreement on this. This was a classic soul record made by Stock Aitken and Waterman, written and produced, and it's Say I'm Your Number One from the marvellous Princess.
But it only got number two in the charts.
That was Say I'm Your Number One here on Brighton and Hove's number one community radio station, Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. This is In the Mex with me, your host Paul Mex, and I'm joined by my cohort Trevor Random.
Hey.
And special guest Wayne Imms. Both are Stock Aitken and Waterman fans. And Stock Aitken and Waterman
fans.
Hang on.
Suddenly they cry wolf on me.
I'm not a fan, but they did some good tunes.
Okay. Yeah. They both respect Stock Aitken and Waterman, as I do myself.
They're both
crying wolf on me a bit now. Okay. This is the show that Reverb refused to broadcast, but it's being broadcast now because they do have a gig coming up, don't they, Trevor?
Big gig in Hyde Park. The good news is, interestingly enough, they're only signed to PWL, but not produced by PWL, but they're back together, the Fantastic Two Unlimited.
There's no lyrics.
That was a great tune, though.
Technotronic.
Well, that was a different band, wasn't it?
It brought in time.
You're saying they're back together, though, but it's only two of them. It's not hard to get a band back together.
I'm glad they're back together.
If it's one, it'd be one Unlimited, obviously.
But what was interesting about them, they were bringing in, at the same time, we were going to the M25 raves, looking for those illegal parties everywhere, and it was Acid House was going on. And they kind of brought a homogenised version of that to the chart.
That was very big in the late 80s.
One of their tunes really sounds like a KLF sample. But it's that formula. They were called the Hit Factory.
And they did actually work like that, because I've been a record producer for 30 years, and I was working with a similar...
Paul.
All right. But I did actually talk to Pete Waterman once. He phoned up my boss. I had to connect him through. In fact, my boss pretended he was out.
So were you the receptionist? I was, actually.
Yeah.
Well, we did that as well as a cleaner.
We all used to pitch in. When the receptionist went for lunch, we'd all sort of take over here and there.
We've got form for grabbing receptionists and turning them into stars.
Yeah. Rick Astley, he was coffee the tea maker. Kylie Minogue was a mechanic from Australia.
Yeah. Jason Donovan used to paint the ice.
Going back to how they operated, though, Pete Waterman was the businessman, and the company was called PWL, Pete Waterman Limited, and he actually signed Stock and Aitken as producers and writers, and they actually were the guys in the studio making the records. Pete Waterman was out doing the deals and promoting himself, which they later, Stock and Aitken, weren't too happy about, were they?
No.
I think there was a sort of split of egos towards the end, even though obviously they'd made lots and lots of money.
Lots of money.
But they did operate as a factory. Stock and Aitken would come in and be writing the songs and churning them out, and then they'd go home, and then at night, Phil Harding and Pete Hammond, who I was fortunate enough to work with a lot in the early 80s before he worked with Stock Aitken and Waterman. And there is actually a link there, because Pete Waterman used to be a producer manager, and he used to manage a producer called Pete Collins, who produced Musical Youth.
Oh yes.
And Pete Hammond, who later ended
Past
up being
the Duchy.
Yes, who later ended up being Stock Aitken and Waterman's mixer. He worked a lot with Pete Collins, and that's how Pete Waterman knew all these people. So basically, Stock and Aitken would make the records in the daytime. Pete Waterman often give him a brief, and he'd come up with a title, often coined from the artists themselves, like you mentioned Mel and Kim.
Yes.
And Mel and Kim used to say showing out, didn't they?
Yeah.
And he just took that and gave it to Stock and Aitken, Mike Stock, Matt Aitken, and they basically made a song from it. And then they'd go home at tea time, and then Phil Harding and Pete Hammond would come in and mix throughout the night. So it really was a factory, and they really were kind of knocking all the tunes out.
It's like when Kylie, the young Australian mechanic, came in, said, "We're going to make you into a big star." And she said, "Oh, I should be so lucky." And, you know, and then it happened, and Banana Ryman came in.
Well, there's a story about Banana Ryman.
They had a bit of gossip, and they began by telling Pete, "I heard a rumour. Great title. Yeah. Let's do it."
And then Kylie came in and said, "Well, it's Better Than the Devil You Know."
And on that note, here is Kylie with Better Than the Devil You Know. And we're going to be telling you about when that PWL concert occurs in Hyde Park on July the 11th, straight after Kylie and Better Than the Devil You Know. That was Kylie Minogue here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. You won't hear Kylie too often on Radio Reverb, but today on In The Mex with me, your host Paul Mex, and my cohort Trevor Random, and special guest Wayne Imms. All respects, Stock Aitken and Waterman.
Guilty pleasure.
Yeah, so, we are playing everything with Stock Aitken and Waterman today, because on the 11th of July, they're having a kind of Stock Aitken and Waterman gig.
Festival, isn't it? Forget Glastonbury, this is the big one. The big one.
London Hyde Park. Brilliant. On July the 11th, and it features Steps are actually headlining, even though they weren't a PWO act.
Yeah, I don't get that.
Probably because they were linked with Pete Waterman.
Okay, they were actually sadly very popular, but they're the worst act.
Yeah. They were rubbish, basically. Yeah.
I thought they were dreadful.
Yeah, they were.
It was a tragedy.
But Jason Donovan's on the bill, as is everybody's favourite, Sonia.
Brilliant. Hazel Dean.
Yeah, she's going to be appearing.
Fantastic. Is she going to be searching, looking for love?
She probably will be.
So what about Samantha Fox?
Don't know about Samantha Fox.
Yeah. But Touch Me was a big hit.
Yeah, very big hit.
Rick Astley will be there.
Brilliant.
As will Princess, who we've already played.
Fantastic.
And I know you like these ones, Trev. Dead or Alive.
Dead or Alive.
Well, that was a huge hit. February of 1995,
yeah,
when I was doing work experience at TVS. That was in the charts, number one for 5 weeks.
Well, I read Pete Waterman's autobiography, and even though they had massive success, they were always on the brink of financial disaster. And basically, the company was about to go down. And luckily for Pete Waterman, there was a postal strike, and he managed to ward his bank off, who were just about to pull the plug. And then they produced the Dead or Alive record, and it went to number one. Because the postal strike delayed the bank pulling the plug on him, when the record went to number one, it gave him a few extra days to tell the bank, look, we've got a number one record, loads of money's going to be coming in. And so PWR was saved. And what a great record.
I think we should play Dead or Alive now, actually.
Okay, well, here's Dead or Alive with
You Spin Me Right Round.
Like a record, baby.
Dead or Alive, produced by Stock Aitken and Waterman, being played here today on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM on In The Mex here with me, Paul Mex, and Trevor Random, and our special guest Wayne Imms. We all respect Stock Aitken and Waterman, so all of today's records are Stock Aitken and Waterman related.
They were quite respectable.
And that record will be coming up soon. We play Dead or Alive now, and another act that Stock Aitken and Waterman worked with were Bananarama. Now, Bananarama were already successful.
Yeah, because they did have some real quality singles before they went to PWL.
Yeah.
obviously Cruel Summer, top pop tune, and then of course they did a couple of hits with Funboy 3.
Yeah. Do you know actually how they started their career?
No, but I can't wait to tell me.
They made some early recordings with a Sex Pistol, Paul Cook. He'd done some of their early recordings in his studio. So a Sex Pistol got Bananarama started.
Back in the day, whenever I saw those girls out on the town at different venues.
And they were out on the town a lot, weren't they?
A lot. They were always really, really drunk.
Yes, yes.
Really
yes.
drunk. Those girls knew how to have a good time.
They did. They were the real deal, actually.
Oh, yeah. I was at the Camden Palace, now Coco, the launch. Rusty Egan and Steve Strange were opening it, and they were there. A right mess, let me tell you.
I saw them about 3 years ago at the Brighton Centre backstage. And
hello. Bananarama?
Yeah.
Because when I saw them supporting the Scissor Sisters about 5 or 6 years ago,
wow.
There were only two of them.
Yeah, it was only two at the Brighton Centre.
Because Siobhan longer with them.
Yeah, she left.
Of course, went on to be
Shakespeare's sister.
Absolutely.
Incredible. And what a great voice.
Absolutely.
But Bananarama went to PWL because they were the producers of the time. And then there's actually a reason why they went to PWL, and that was because they heard Dead or Alive's You Spin Me Right Round, and they just loved that kind of Euro sound.
Yes.
But even though it was a Euro disco sound, they did it with a bit of a twist, didn't they? They had their own sound to it.
Well, there was a kind of punk ethos going on there. Not punkers, you and I probably know it.
But I do have to say, in Pete Waterman's autobiography, he does claim to have invented punk.
Well,
as he does revolutionise the railway system. He changed the world, basically. His ego does go a bit nutty in his book, and he does...
He invented the BlackBerry?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not too sure about that. The ethos of we can do anything.
Yeah.
And it was the 80s,
exactly.
You know. We were very optimistic then. And
maybe they were very much a product of the 80s because of it being that particular decade.
Yeah, you know? It was all about...
cheesiness, manufactured stuff,
and
pure
greed
pop.
As well was in there.
Perhaps,
somewhere.
Yeah,
and showing that you have money, and it was all filofaxes and huge mobile phones then. But yeah, they called themselves the Hit Factory, and the only other Hit Factory I can think of off the top of my head possibly was Motown.
Exactly.
Nobody disses that, do they?
Some of those Motown records are cheesy in the same way as Stock Aitken & Waters records are cheesy.
And also formulaic.
Yeah,
they sounded the same. They found a thing that worked, and they stuck with it.
Do you think that then that Stock Aitken & Waters, it's unfair that some of the dissing
I think so.
And do you think that's because it came out in the 80s and people said they were soulless? But as we've proven, some of their records have got a lot of soul in
them. Some people said when they first heard Rick Astley sing that they thought he was black.
Exactly.
He did have a really soulful voice.
Really good voice.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, great voice, showing about the dancing.
I've got in front of me a couple of compilation CDs and I'm just reading through some of them, and I forgot about this lot, Brother Beyond.
Because you mentioned Motown, and I don't know if you know, but they sampled, is it This Old Heart of Mine at the first beat of that is exactly the same.
Okay, well, we'll come on to Brother Beyond afterwards, but going back to Bananarama, they heard Dead or Alive, they wanted that sound, but when they went into the studio with Stock Aitken & Waterman, they were giving them a much kind of cheesier, poppier sound, and apparently they were the most difficult act to work
with. I'm sure they were.
And it was close to a punch-up, so they all retired to the pub, and suddenly one of the girls actually said, we want to sound like Dead or Alive, and Stock and Aitken kind of went, oh, we can make that sound easy. Give us half an hour. They went back to the studio, and they did Venus, which does sound a bit like You Spin Me Right Round. It's got that same kind of...
That was a cover, of course.
But that's the sound that Bananarama wanted. And it took them like half an hour to knock that up.
But I don't know if you know that they got increasingly frustrated with PWL, especially Pete Waterman, very controlling.
Yes.
They just had enough in the end.
Again, that was one of the criticisms aimed at Stock Aitken & Waterman. You were a puppet if you became part of their machinery or were produced by them. But anyway, let's have a listen to Venus by Bananarama. I have to say, I really, really like this tune. I actually think this is better than the original, believe it or not.
She's
You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. Wayne has got to go, so he's going to quickly tell us his Brother Beyond story, which is you bought the record.
Yeah, The Harder I Try. It's actually got a good melody. I think it's quite a good solid pop song.
One of the acts on that PWL worked with that I actually hated.
That's why you bought Paul.
I think it's a good song, you know, good lyrics. Yeah, it's got a melody.
Really?
The Harder I Try.
I did actually get to work with Nathan, the lead singer, not that long ago, actually, and I found him incredibly frustrating, man, I have to say.
Well, it was in that period where Curiosity had killed the cat were in the charts, and there was all about that Levi's advert.
Nick Kamen.
And it was all about front men being quite modelly and good-looking, and they fitted in that bracket, didn't they, Brother Beyond?
Yeah. It's probably not saying that much, but they were one of the biggest boy bands of the 80s.
I think
and this was, of course, before Boyzone and Take That.
Yeah. So you went out and bought the record, Wayne?
I bought the record. I actually bought it on 12-inch.
Really?
As I say, really good song, actually.
Okay, well, you've got...
Quite underrated.
Do you think so?
I do.
Well, thanks for joining us, Wayne, and confessing to, having the guilty pleasure of Stock Aitken and Waterman. Well, not many people will come out of the closet and admit that, but us three are. Now it's going to be down to just me and Trevor. But this is for you, Wayne. Thanks for joining us today on In The Mix.
Thank you.
This is the 7-inch version of Brother Beyond and The Harder I Try. You haven't got mad. This is Radio Reverb 97.2 FM In The Mix with me, your host Paul Mex, joined with Trevor Random, and we are today playing records by Stock Aitken and Waterman, the show that Reverb didn't want us to broadcast.
That's true,
because most people hate Stock Aitken and Waterman, but we have an appreciation towards them.
It's a guilty pleasure, isn't it?
Yes,
it's a guilty pleasure.
And they do have their Stock Aitken and Waterman festival coming up, a one day special in Hyde Park on July 11th.
Glastonbury, this is the one.
This is the
hot ticket. I think it's going to be absolutely rammed, because there's a real nostalgia vibe going on at the moment. You know,
there is,
what with the way the world is at the moment, we're all harking back to what we perceive to be happier times.
Exactly.
And you've noticed how many sort of 80s club nights have suddenly appeared in Brighton. Yeah, these people are 18, 19 years old, so they weren't really around in the 80s, were they?
So, I mean, and it's a feel-good factor, because the one thing about Stock Aitken and Waterman Records...
They're fun.
I remember Pete Waterman once saying, and I like the honesty that he kind of threw out. I do remember him saying once, the kids go out, they buy my record, they play it half a dozen times, then they throw it away.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of honesty in that.
Yeah, that's
Because a lot of the indie indie guys at that time were kind of being all up themselves a little bit.
Yeah, well, they're making art, weren't they?
And people were almost just straightforward about it. No illusions or delusions about what they were trying to do, even if he may have massaged certain things later.
Love him or hate him, he was a good self-publicist, and their body of work lives on now. And who can forget, and it probably still happens to people now, have you ever been Rick-rolled on YouTube?
Yes, yes.
Do you remember that time where you'd log in, the thing you were looking at something else, and suddenly it'd be Rick Ashling, Never Gonna Give You Up?
Exactly.
Incredible. How did that happen?
Well, I mean, you're saying about Pete Waterman there sort of being a self-publicist, and of course, in many ways, even though Mike Stock and Matt Aitken made tons of money, it was Pete Waterman doing too much publicity on himself, possibly, that arguably made what became their demise.
Think of the position of a producer. People talked about him, but pop fans didn't care who the producers were.
No.
We're looking at their CDs now, and there's beautifully done pictures of the producers.
Actually, they don't look good, do they?
Well, it's all professionally done, and photographed like they're an act. And they're just the producers, aren't they? Well,
and writers in many instances.
Yeah, so it was interesting, that change of dynamic there.
But that's also what got them a lot of flack, because people said that they shouldn't be more important than the artist.
Yeah, and I'll go back to what we talked about earlier, was, you know, we think about Motown and those sort of artists, and Phil Spector.
Exactly.
And we all know who Phil Spector is.
Phil Spector, again, he was more important than half of his artists, wasn't he?
Yeah, so it's an interesting thing. But we're going on about how great they were, but hang on a minute, there were a couple of dodgy ones, wasn't there? Well, and do you remember the Dolly Dots?
I kind of loosely do. I don't think they were successful, were they?
I don't think they were. I can vaguely remember this tune, but let's have a little listen to this. That's quite enough of that, I think. What a night.
Now, that is rubbish. Just utter rubbish.
Yeah.
No disrespect if the Dolly Dots are listening.
So, who knows? Perhaps they were the women that came in and cleaned the toilets.
Exactly. They did make other records that actually were still also awful, that were successful.
Yes.
Such as the one Pat and Mick, two Capital Radio DJs of the time, which was done for charity.
Doesn't make it good, Paul.
No, the record is a bit of a cry.
There's another charity one we can play, but have a listen to this one.
That is really, truly awful, Trevor.
Pat Sharp was on Nevermind the Buzzcocks I was watching the other night.
I hope he's had a haircut.
Yeah, his cohort, Mick, whatever his surname, he was on with him as well, Yeah, another dodgy one. What about this one as well?
Well, this is the kind of the Rolls Royce of possibly the worst record they've made. But it does feature one of the world's most famous artists ever, doesn't it?
Apparently. And I forgot about this. There was a point where every record was for aid of something.
Yeah.
This was Fairy Aid. I'm reading the sleeve notes here. A British number one and a worldwide million seller, featuring a stellar collection of talent, amongst them Kate Bush, Boy George, Paul McCartney. This was the only cover of a Beatles song to chart higher than the Fab Forbes original version. It was for charity.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness,
yeah, that is particularly horrible, I have to admit, Trevor. That was Stock Aitken and Waterman's version of
Let It Be. I forgot about that, and I forgot what the disaster was they were doing.
It was for Fairy Aid, wasn't it? So
Fairy Sanks.
They may have made some really, really shoddy records, and that was certainly one of them. But still a huge success, and obviously, in a good cause, it raised lots of money for a charity. People still knocked them, but I personally think they made some very, very respectable records.
Well, going back to Bananarama, that gave Stock Aitken and Waterman their first ever American number one.
I do actually, again, remember Pete Waterman at the time going on about it, even though
he was really excited.
No, he was actually disappointed.
Oh, really?
The reason being because they just produced it and they didn't write it.
Hello, and it was a cover.
So they didn't make anywhere near as much money from that record as they should have done had they written the song.
Now, there's a couple of other artists I've forgotten about. Carol Hitchcock.
The record they made with her was actually quite a good record, I thought.
Another Australian.
Do you want a snippet of it?
Yeah, let's have a little bit of that. I never met a boy who makes me feel the way that you do. It's all right.
See, now I think that's a good cover version, but wasn't a hit.
I don't remember that one at all. But were they trying to find another Carly at that point? Because she'd left the stable by then and got involved with Nick Cave. She moved to Deconstruction Records,
didn't she?
Which was a radical move at that point.
And it kind of hurt her as well.
It did, but she'd done that brilliant track, Abide With Me.
That's right.
It's fantastic, in fact.
Yeah, we can't play it on this one because Stock Aitken and Waterman didn't produce it.
Who's Mandy? I just can't wait.
I'm going to remind you who Mandy is. I'm going to say one name and let's see if it triggers it in your head. And this was Stock Aitken and Waterman capitalising on sensationalism. Bill Wyman.
It was his girlfriend. She was 17 when she recorded this.
Yeah.
And it reached number 16 in Switzerland, number 14 in Germany, number 9 in Norway, and number 8 in Italy. Top 75 in the UK.
So that means it was got to 74, perhaps?
Somewhere like that.
I mean, that was, again, another one of those shoddy records. I'm not even going to play that one.
No.
It wasn't good. And that was them just capitalising on the situation. Because they did do that, didn't they? You know, I mean, they did it with Kylie and Jason. And Kylie had already made a record in Australia, but they kind of saw what was being popular with the kids. Mm. They watched Neighbours and then sort of pulled them in. Like, almost like a kind of prototype version of what Simon Cowell later did.
And Pete was a judge, wasn't he, on Pop Idol at one point, wasn't he? Another one I found on this album, I forgot about. Wow. Mondo Kane.
I don't remember that one.
Who are they? Featuring Georgie Fane. Can we have a little listen to that one?
On a Sunday, went to a city hoping this would be the one day. New York afternoon, took a subway. Went to the village, Chinatown, and walked.
Now, that's rubbish, Trevor.
It actually says here, not one of Saul's biggest hits. Featured the vocals of Georgie Fame, which was his first chart hit over 15 years.
But like I said, they did make some respectable records.
They did, yes.
And I think we have to play this one.
We've got to play this.
Sadly, can't remember which one passed away. Was it Mel?
Mm.
Or was it Kim? Sisters, anyway. And they were a perky couple from Camden, weren't they?
Cockney girls, they've been described as here. They had a top 10 album called FLM. Do you remember that tune?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fun, Love and Money, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Is that what it's still for?
Very 80s.
That sold over 400,000 copies.
Wow.
Now, you think about today, you only have to sell, I think it's 12,000 to get a chart number one.
Exactly.
That's why we get a chart number one every week now.
I know.
It's madness. Back in those days, 400,000 copies, that was a lot.
And it was proper records, and it was actually vinyl, which was proper product, which cost more, which meant more money. More money for Stock Aitken and Waterman.
Guy doing the artwork, and the guy pressing it,
exactly.
And all those people. Yeah.
I think this did go to number one, didn't it?
I hope so, it's brilliant.
Respectable by Mel and Kim.
On every night, explanations are complications. We don't need to know the where or why. Taking chances, bold advances. Don't care if you think we're out of line. Conversation is intelligent. Just
That was Respectable by Mel and Kim right here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. This is In The Mex with me, your host Paul Mex, and my cohort Trevor Random. And we are possibly the only two guys in Britain confessing to Respect.
I
Stock
think
Aiken
there's a few
Walton.
More out there, Paul.
They're
I mean,
in the closet,
that's
are they?
A great tune, though, Respect.
Fantastic,
great
fantastic.
Tune. Yeah, it's just a fun, great pop song.
We are coming to the end of the show, but we do want to slip Hazel Dean in, don't we? Because we both like Hazel Dean.
Careful where you say that. Well, there was a point in my life where I couldn't go anywhere without seeing Hazel Dean doing a PA at some gay bar or pub in London at the time. Well, she's on that lineup, that stellar lineup, that appearing on the 11th of July at Hyde Park, along with Two Unlimited,
Sanita,
Jason Donovan,
Pepsi and Shirley.
Your mates.
No,
anyway.
I didn't actually know Pepsi. I did know Shirley actually pretty well in the early days. She was a member of Wham. Well, she was actually Andrew Ridgely's girlfriend at the time. And there's another crossover there, because Andrew Ridgely from Wham, his partner is Kerem from Bananarama.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they live together in Cornwall. It's all very incestuous.
It's a small world, isn't
See,
it?
See, I could have actually ended up with one of Bananarama. Thankfully, I didn't.
Dodged a bullet there.
Yeah, but Hazel Dean, I did a remix for her in the 90s. I never actually got to meet her, but I did have several phone conversations with her. And she was a really nice lady.
Searching, looking for love.
But we're not going to play that one today.
No. What are you going to play?
Let's have a listen to Hazel Dean and Who's Leaving Who.
Fallen down, with both of us wandering on.
That was Hazel Dean here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the mix with me, Paul Mex, and Trevor Random. And today we've been celebrating Stock, Aitken & Waterman, the show that Reverb didn't want us to bring you, but we've done it because they have got their gig coming up in Hyde Park on July the 11th. I have to say that they produced so much in that 80s period that we've only really skimmed the surface. We could do a whole nother show on this, but we probably won't be able to because we will probably got skinned alive ourselves.
Yeah, I'm going to say. There's a few DJs on Reverb who have had a bad experience with PWL up in London at a pop quiz, and we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, probably. Still to this day, they leave a nasty taste in people's mouths for some reason. But ultimately, it is a guilty pleasure, isn't it?
I think people are always diss things that are successful, aren't they?
We're very good at it in this country.
If they were American, they'd be lauded.
Maybe that's the reason why Motown, which was almost like a hit factory as well, is so celebrated, and Stock, Aitken & Waterman aren't.
I think we've hit the nail on the head there.
And on that note, we are going to leave you with a big mega mix.
This is a huge mega mix. This has got Debbie Harry, Donna Summer, Hazel Dean, of course, Mel and Kim, Rick Ashley.
All the people that Stock, Aitken & Waterman work with. This is a mashup of all their tunes. Thank you for listening to this week's In the Mex. Even though it may not have been your cup of tea, we hope that we've brought you something to get your teeth into.
Well, send us your emails. Tell us what you think. Was it a good idea? Was it a bad idea?
Exactly. Should we do volume 2?
Were the 80s all that bad?
Yeah.
Were they that good?
And if you want to do that, all you've got to do is go to the website, all the W's, inthemex.co.uk, and you can get in touch personally, and who knows, you could even end up on the show. But thank you for listening, and thanks for joining me today, Trevor, and confessing to being a Stock, Aitken & Waterman fan.
It did feel a bit like a confessional, actually, yes.
Thanks to Wayne also for joining us.
Yeah, of course.
I've got no qualms. I like Stock, Aitken & Waterman. And my favourite bands are Sex Pistols, so how eclectic is that?
I'm in the same camp as you, so yeah. Let's not forget my other favourite bands, Zig Sputnik.
Who did work with Stock, Aitken & Waterman. Thanks for listening, and tune in again next week.
the mix.